Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Always good to be here with you, Brittany. And thank you to the IBEW, Local 5, and Teamsters for supporting the show. We appreciate it.
And back joining us right now, we've got Buck Dino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's a pleasure, ladies, always.
And good you've got you. A guest.
Yes, I do. I do have State Representative David LeGrand from Grand Rapids. David, thanks for joining us on the show today. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Buck.
It's always fun. You know, it's as we turn into Labor Day, I noticed the fog's rolling in and some of the leaves are starting to turn up here, so it's going to be upon us pretty quickly. So.
Yeah, don't say it.
Yeah. Anyway, David, let's talk a little bit about something. Being Labor Day, let's talk a little bit about how organized labor has affected you as a person and also as a candidate.
Sure. I actually spent a lot of time thinking about this recently, just because as we're looking forward to the 2018 election, there are, I guess, two things I'd say on a personal level. Organized labor has really gotten the need to get involved in politics for a long time. And, you know, on a personal level, they've always been very, very supportive of me, which I'm very proud of and glad about. On a broader level, you know, I think we were talking about, you know, the Democratic Party as a big tent and, need for African-American voices and LGBT voices and feminist voices. And I was talking with someone from labor, and they said, and labor voices. And I said, well, kind of not, in the sense that I think of labor is an ideological voice. I mean, the vision of labor is we're all in this together, right? I mean, the one word for the labor movement is solidarity. So it's not, in a sense, labor at its best is not interest group politics. It's a vision of America in which we are all in. And that's why it's hard for me to sometimes separate what I think of the labor movement, the best parts of the labor movement from the best parts of the Democratic Party, which I'm proud to be part of. But at their best, both of those organizations or movements articulate a vision of inclusion and mutual support shared sacrifice. Sacrifice sounds like a dirty word, but I don't know what else to say. Like, at some point, at important points in our lives, we are defined by I am convinced, by our ability to help each other and to act in ways that aren't simply in our own self-interest. And at its best, that's what the labor movement has always been a vision of. And at its best, that's what the Democratic Party is able to articulate. And so to the extent that those groups are able to hold to those visions, I'm with them, because that's the vision I want for me too. Long answer.
Hello? Still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I kind of lost you there for a minute. But, you know, you said something about the meaning of organized labor, how it's inclusiveness, and you know, and we were talking a little bit earlier today, and one of the biggest fights that we're talking about wage stagnation and the way it's affected this country, and it's, you know, some would say it's been stagnated for 20 to 30 years. I would say even longer.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why is it that corporate America basically is so, you know, they like to tout how, one of the ladies brought up today, they like to tout about how the unemployment numbers are going down, but yet still people are struggling. Why is it so important for them to basically keep their thumb on the American worker?
Well, it's, you know, low unemployment numbers are great for the people running the factories, if they can get the conditions right. But, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I don't really ever blame raw capitalism for doing what raw capitalism does. Raw capitalism is about maximizing profit. That's all its goal is by design. And so it's a little bit like, you know, the joke I sometimes use is that capitalism is a lot like a tiger. It's really strong. It's really powerful, but you can't be all that surprised if it eats your kids. And that's why we need government, and that's why we need organized labor, is to rein in, is to control and channel the forces of capitalism, because capitalism inherently is an amoral thing. It's got no more inherent morality than a fire hose does. Fire hoses also can deliver water to you and help you put out a fire, or they can, suppress free speech. They deliver a powerful agent, but how you use that agent depends on the morality of the person using it. Well, if you've got an amoral force, you have to worry about what the structural things are that will control that amoral force. And people who want to keep capitalism entirely unregulated will point out the, nice CEOs. And there absolutely are nice CEOs. And there are moral CEOs. But there's no inherent requirement that a CEO be moral. And so, if you're going to hold capitalism accountable, capitalism naturally wants to accumulate more and more money in fewer and fewer right. hands. And that is a consequence. Now, if you have a moral vision of equality and a moral vision of inclusion, then you got to do something about that. And there are so in a sense, I tend to be self-critical in these situations. So when you say, why are wages stagnating? Well, it's because we workers have to up our game and get more organized and get ourselves into a position where we can actually demand, all the headlines. You always see headlines that, new high corporate profits, as though that's wonderful.
Right.
Corporate profits can come out of either A, producing a good product that people want to buy, but also out of not sharing what, if you share it with the workers, it's not called profits anymore, it's called expenses. And so you can have a company that produces good, incredibly good value, but if it was radically egalitarian and spread all of the benefits out to the workers, that would make it look less profitable. So part of this comes down to the question of how we even measure these things. I've said for a long time that, for example, looking at the GNP is a fundamentally impoverished way to even measure the strength mm-hmm. of the economy. Because, let's say I, instead of going home and hanging around with my kids tonight, I paid someone else to watch my kids, and I went off to a movie. That would look like a good event in the economy, because I'd pay somebody to go to the movie, and I'd pay somebody to watch my kids. That doesn't actually increase wealth in society at all. But it's a transaction that occurs in the economy, and so we track it. We act like that was a good economic event. If you paid me to go out in my backyard and dig a hole all morning and then fill it in all afternoon, that would look like a good economic event as far as the GDP goes. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be producing anything of any value at all, but it would look like an economic event, right? So right. what we've got to really look at is, I think, better discussions and better measures of what we really mean by economic health.
David, I guess I've been involved in the labor movement almost 50 years. And, I've always, it's been the kind of the same message, And mm-hmm. I grasp, and I'm trying to think, and I always want to say to myself, well, what's next? How do we get to that next level?
Uh-huh.
And through some of these, we've talked about some of these groups that have what we call work councils that set up with employers to have a seat at the table and different ways of connecting organized labor to the employers. I'm just concerned that sometimes that we're just treading water and we're just talking about the same things that we talked about 50 years ago.
Yeah. Well, but in a sense, that's true, and let me give you a little more positive way to look at it. Maybe every year U of M goes out and tries to win a football game against Ohio State. Yeah. The fact that they got to go do it all again next year doesn't mean they didn't try last year.
Right.
Now, when I'm down, I look at like Charlottesville. You look at Charlottesville and you think, oh my gosh, all of the work we've done in our society in America to honestly unpack narratives of inequality, of injustice. I mean, we really can't get past the fact that America is founded on walking into an area where human beings were living who had a pretty impressive vision of the world. They didn't think you could own land because that didn't make any sense in their worldview. And we said, oh, you can't own land? Sucks to be you. We own it all now. Right? And you know, we announced policies of mass extermination for Native Americans. I mean, I actually spent some of my childhood in the Maritimes in Canada, and there was a Native American tribe in Newfoundland that doesn't exist anymore because every last one of them was shot by Westerners. You know, there are appalling things in our past history. And we've had the courage to talk about them and to address them. And all of a sudden now, you know, we have a president who acts as though there's two sides to white supremacy. Yeah. There aren't two sides to that. There aren't two appropriate sides to a discussion about Nazism. There aren't two appropriate sides to talk about racial oppression. There aren't two appropriate sides to talk about slavery. I mean, there just aren't. But here we are, having taken a massive step back in that issue. It makes you weep and it makes you tired.
You know, what I wanted to bring up with the fact is that I understand that it's a long-term battle, but I think that sometimes people get to a certain position or stage in their life where, you know, you kind of, you're, you know...
You get tired.
Not necessarily.
You
know, I can see the change. You know, I see the change with the Fight for 15, the Occupy movement, all the, you know, the fast food workers and all the restaurant workers and all the things that we're talking about. I see all those things on the horizon. And, you know, when you get to be a 64-year-old guy, you're in a hurry. And that's... More, you know, I know that we have to keep up the fight, and they keep talking about organized labor as if they're non-existent. But we've been here all these years, and we're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's just it's a constant assault, and sometimes you do get a little worried, but sometimes it just fires up the base, so to speak. But I think that, you know, we have been talking about, and I said it's a simple campaign slogan for me. It's health care for all and raise the wage. I mean,
yep.
What else is there?
Yep. I mean, yep. I mean, it's time we just, I mean, it would not be hard to do. I mean, I shouldn't put it this way. You know, if Trump's famous quote, who knew healthcare was so complicated? Well, it's true that what we've got now is complicated, but it's also true that Medicare works.
Exactly.
And that is a single payer system.
Right.
And you could just simply ratchet that down sequentially and you'd have universal healthcare.
Exactly. Exactly.
That would not be hard to do. Now, it would cost money. There would be bumps along the way. There would be discussions about pay schedules. There would be all of the nitty-gritty. But conceptually, that is not hard conceptually. I think you're right. I think it's absolutely time that we start talking about this. And I think that if there's a proxy for how to stop wage theft and wage erosion, raising the minimum wage is the best one I can see. Because if you raise the minimum wage, the people who are currently making $2 above minimum wage will continue to want $2 above minimum wage.
Right.
So it is a rising tide, which I hope would, if not lift all boats, would at least lift a whole lot of boats.
Right.
It probably wouldn't affect the wages of, the starting wages of lawyers on Wall Street firms.
Right.
But it would probably help carpenters and electricians and framers and school teachers.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, you'd have to raise the wages of school teachers in the city of Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
You would.
Hold that thought, David. We got to take a little break here. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Talk Radio.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone
or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
You know what really gets a party started? Indoor baseball. Yeah, just find a broom or a pool cue, and you can use, like, anything as a ball. Cans, bottles, shoes.
Hey, bro, toss me that avocado.
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Underage drinking and driving, the ultimate party foul. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Attention men, under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. There goes let's grab dinner and a movie. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, good evening, officer. A woman admires that kind of foresight. And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Because nothing says, I'm a catch, more than a guy who lives in his parents' basement and calls it my place.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Allison is perfect. I mean, she'd never tell you that. She's humble and perfect. She likes everyone. She even likes her untidy roommate's weird guinea pig. Allison, wait, are you texting and driving? Allison, no. That's the exact opposite of what I was just saying about you. Why, Allison? Why? Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopRex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. We've been having lots of fun. We hope you guys have too. And a quick thank you to the United Mine Workers of America and IBEW Local 5 for all of your support. We really appreciate it.
And back with us, we have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio. Hey Buck.
Great to be with you ladies, always.
Great
Thanks
to have
for
you
joining
back.
Us.
We also have David LeGrand, State Representative from Grand Rapids, Michigan. David, we appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us today.
I appreciate being on.
You know, as we were leaving, we were talking about the effects of organized labor on just about everything that we do, from our wages, our health care. But, you know, one of the things we must do, I guess, is as supporters of labor, as we get into this weekend, we must always, kind of honor the past and what's happened before us, but what we need to do is we need to stand firm and encourage the future. And that's by, the younger generation and to keep getting the message out and make them kind of hopefully pay attention to what's going on, and also so that they can make a better life for their family. So it's great to be part of and a part of history, and I never have ever got up one day and regretted I was part of organized labor.
Yeah, well, and I think that one of the things that labor's got to work on moving forward is, actually in Michigan we've had to deal with right to work, mm-hmm. but I had a really good conversation with some labor leaders the other day who said, we really haven't lost members,
no.
Because they've been good enough at getting the message out and the point mm-hmm. out that, labor is good for the people it represents. It just is. The last union I was in didn't have the right to binding arbitration and didn't have the right to strike. So what we had was what I call collective begging.
That's right.
and fortunately, most labor unions still do have the right to collective bargaining, but, you know, that's going to continue to be under attack going forward. And we have to, you know, we have to be vigilant, and we have to remind people of the need to stick together on these things and be unified. So there are going to be challenges ahead, but yeah, there are, you know, it's nice to be part of a meaningful group that's trying to work on common issues. Yeah. One of the things I remember early when I got into my political career, I remember I get a call from a UAW organizer who wanted me to go down and talk about raising minimum wage. And I thought, wow, nobody in the UAW makes minimum wage. And the UAW is front and center on trying to raise it. Like, they are worried about people who aren't in their unions, and they are doing work for people who aren't in the union. And they are just, you know, they're just worried about living in a just society. Like, these are my friends.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing of it is that, and that's what unions have always been about. You know, you look at our organizations, you talked about earlier about having a collective bargaining. Well, we wish bargaining for everyone, you know, and that's what I'm saying is that when you talk about prevailing wage and you talk about right to work, and you mentioned it briefly, it really hasn't had an effect on the organized labor, but it surely has an effect on the people that are not yet union and brothers and sisters. They're not making as much money. They're working two or three jobs, so you can still see it out there every day. So that's why we know our fight's not done. We know it's continue.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things that I think that unions, I think there's a real opportunity for them to get in the space and work on issues of wage theft, because that's something that's happening all over the community.
Yeah.
You know, people getting fired, not getting their last paycheck, people getting made to work overtime and not getting compensated for it. And that's an issue that, you know, doesn't affect the organized, but it does affect the unorganized, and that's why it's great to see, you know, unions who are going out into those previously unorganized areas. I mean, UFCW's done some great work there, and, you know, a lot of service workers aren't. Well, and frankly, you know, one of the ads I keep hearing when I'm on hold on this radio station is for organizing college instructors, and that's awesome. Because colleges have had this shift in the last 20 or 30 years that a lot of people haven't noticed, which is, you know, their number of administrators have exploded, their numbers of people earning really fat salaries have exploded, while they've shifted to a model of paying the actual professors on a per course basis, you know, a couple $1,000 a course, which basically means you got college professors getting you know, starvation wages, while the you know, vice president in charge of pillows in the dorms makes $500,000 a year.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's very important that we all pay attention, and that's what I'm saying. We all should all pay attention to our neighbors, our friends, and what's going on in their lives, because what we need to do is just to be doing exactly what you're doing, is to make sure that everybody's aware of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that being said, David, you know, we want to wish all the best to the our hearts and prayers are going out to the people in Texas. We know firsthand about those types of problems. And, you know, we were just, you know, you struggle with things to do and what you should do, and obviously you send money to the Red Cross. But one of the things I heard the other day that I thought would be a really good thing to do was they're really low on blood down there. And they're going to be low on blood because of what's going on. So if you can't, you know, one way to help out everybody is to go get blood.
Yep, it's true. And the other thing is to, you know, again, it's no fun, but we've got to remember that they're going to need persistent, long-term support. I mean, that one of the ways that we failed as a country on Katrina, or that our administration failed on Katrina, you know, was by acting like this was a short-term problem.
Right.
And it's not a short-term problem. It's going to take a long time to rebuild people's lives down there. So this rah-rah, we're doing great, everybody's response is so awesome, is not really the response we need. Not when people's lives are being lost and the people who are, you know, surviving, their lives are still in shambles. You know, they're going to need help, and we want to remember that, and we want to remember that, you know, we are all in this together. And
David,
so,
thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Buck. Take care.
Take care of yourself. That being said, for Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, I'm Buck Juneau, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor Stock Radio.